Jeremy, what are your general thoughts about vaping, particularly e-cigarettes?
General thoughts are putting, what do they call it? It's like when you dress something, putting a lipstick on a pig. That's what I think. It was meant to be like, see, you can do something that's not as bad for you, but in reality, just as bad for you. Also, let's market to kids.
You've basically just like given me this whole episode, and I'm a little mad, but also very proud of you.
Why did you have lipstick on a pig
I
written?
have lipstick on me. Is that enough? Well, if you're like me, yeah, my response is I don't really know all the details, but it's probably bad. And then, terms like popcorn lung and vape lung come up in the news from time to time, and that sounds scary,
I just don't see a world in which anybody over the age of 18 wants bubblegum flavored nicotine. So, like, why were we creating that?
Totally, I agree with you. Yeah, and being the kind of double think, always curious Gemini, even though I don't really like ascribe to astrology for the record, I also pondered, well, maybe it's better than smoking cigarettes. So, like, insert shrug emoji here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the initial thing was like, if you're not going to stop smoking, do this because at least it's better than that.
Right. Yeah, I've had several e-cigarette vape articles come across my inbox recently, and I thought it would be helpful to present one of our weekly book reports to explain not only like the direct health effects of vaping. I'm going to call it vaping this whole time. We'll get to the end at the end what the nomenclature we should be using is. I'm going to say vaping because it's easier, but technically we'll get to like e-cigarettes should sort of be what we say, but it's just too long. So I'm going to say vaping. But yeah, like this larger social and clinical context to these habits. So, as is my nature, my first thought when sitting to like in front of this blank page that was titled Vaping Outline, it was, who can I ask about this to get some inspiration for the story? And who do you think I reached out to, Jeremy?
Mehmet Oz.
No, I did not, for good reason. But no, none other than our friend and PhD Brady Scott, who's the program director of the Rush Respiratory Care Program. You may remember Brady from episode 55, which was Does Air Pollution Hurt My Lungs? Which serendipitously came out on one of the worst air quality index days in Chicago during the Canada wildfires that was in June of this past year. And Brady had some great vape insights to get my created juices flowing. Would you like to hear what he had to say?
I would love to hear what our friend Brady would say about vaping.
I won't try to mimic his Appalachian accent, but here's his great quote. Quote, I think we need to help people understand that while they may believe it's safer, in fact, there are health risks. I worry about how many kids are using vapes and even trading the cartridges like baseball cards. They see it as harmless vapor when in reality they are getting terribly addicted to nicotine. Any thoughts on that, Jeremy?
It's exactly how I feel.
Right.
It's marketing. Anybody who is around marketing knows that the vast majority of it is targeted at young minds
Yeah.
because that is the most influential. You know, how many times does a parent walk into a store and the kid's like, I want this and this because I saw it on television versus the parent being like, I don't watch advertisements anymore, slash, I'm also don't want to spend my money, which it's my money. So, yeah, I think vaping, as I mentioned, why are we flavoring these
Yeah.
things? When I'm driving in my car in the morning and I see somebody having a cigarette at 7 in the morning, which has always been a little bit interesting to me,
Yes.
I don't think that that person sitting there is like, I'm going to make a healthier choice, so I'm going to vape. And you know what really would be better at 7:30 in the morning? You know, I really could go for like pina colada flavored.
Well, yeah, I think we've made it very clear in our past episodes that we generally are on team harm reduction as a public health policy. But sort of looking through a harm reduction lens at vaping versus smoking, I think that view is pretty foggy. So let's see if we can't clear the air a bit as we attempt to answer the question, is vaping less harmful than smoking? Welcome to Your Doctor Friends, the show that teaches you to sniff out the garbage and answers all the questions that you wish you could call or text your doctor friend. My name's Julie Bruni.
And I'm Jeremy Allen, and we are two physicians who work at a nationally ranked practice and take care of some of the world's greatest athletes. We know that you have questions, and we want to help.
We want to be your doctor friends. Okay, we are back. I would like credit for the fact that I didn't say smoke them if you got them to wrap up our cold open. I would like some credit for that, Jeremy.
You made it 10 seconds into the part after the cold open. Well done.
I still have issues with impulse control. I'm working on it, sort of. All right, Jeremy, I'm going to hit you with my table of contents in an effort to keep my ADHD mind a bit more organized and to give our listeners like a little roadmap of where we plan to take them today. So I got three chapters for you, okay? Chapter one, we'll focus on what we know about how vaping or e-cigarettes affect our health directly, okay? Chapter two, we're going to focus on vaping as a means of curbing cigarette smoking and whether or not this strategy even works. Cool? Chapter three, we'll focus on protecting kids and young adults who compromise like the largest amount of vape users from harm with respect to e-cigarettes. Cool? Only three chapters. I will keep us on task, I hope. All right?
It's great. Can I have a quick clarification?
Yes.
We are talking about vaping with nicotine here. We're not going to go into the world of vaping with other products,
no,
such as THC or anything like that.
We'll touch on it very briefly just as it relates to other health conditions. But in general, we're not really going to touch too much on THC-like vaporization products. And I'm not really going to talk a lot about nicotine-free vape products, although we will touch on that briefly. But we're going to really focus on, thanks for the clarification, vaping products as a nicotine device of delivery. Cool?
Understood. And there's no chapter on hookah as well, correct?
No. I use vape as a general term. Again, we probably should be using e-cigarettes, and I'll sort of use them interchangeably. But I am generally referring to the either multiple use, or we'll talk very specifically about the disposable one-time use only, or like one session use only vape sticks.
Fun story while we're still in the prologue before chapter one. Yours truly did own a hookah for 47 days when he was in college.
Why do you know how many days?
Because I sold it after 47 days. I don't actually know if it was 47, but it did not make it very long.
Yeah,
and
I don't need this.
I remember going to a hookah bar when I was in college and enjoyed it. I think it was probably more the social aspect of it than the actual hookah itself, but I was in college and had terrible impulse control and decided I should have one of these because I like social situations and I want to be the center of attention.
Yeah.
So I bought one, and for a month we used it with friends, and a month later said, this is probably not good for me, and decided to sell it.
At least you were doing it kind of for social reasons. I mean, to be honest with you, like, full disclosure, I smoked in college, and that's how I met all my friends outside of the dorms, is we smoked cigarettes like dumb degenerates in 2002. And, I mean, even then, we still knew how bad it was for us, but that's how I met made a bunch of social connections. And then, thankfully, I wised up before I got to medical school. But, full disclosure, people make bad decisions when they're young.
Wonderful episode from two elderly millennials who made bad choices.
Yeah, but look.
Briefly.
Do as we say, not as we do. Here we go. All right, so to begin, chapter one. What do we know about how vaping affects our bodies? The short answer is we know quite a bit about the short-term effects. We knew much less about long-term effects. And that's something that Brady and I talked about, too. It was like, well, the issue is that there's tons and tons of data because this has been present only really in the past 10-ish years. So the long-term data is a little bit sketchy, but I'm going to give you a relatively deep dive in what we know. So I came across a meta-analysis in Curious. Remember we talked about them in our last episode?
Yeah, we're hanging out with Curious quite a bit these days.
Yeah, I'd love to have a discussion some other time about this journal. They're an online, free-access, peer-reviewed general medical journal. So some folks love it because of the access and the speed of which they can publish, but others in like the research and medical community criticize it for not having enough oversight. But that's another story. It's like Wikipedia of journal articles to some degree, but access is cool. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Anyhoodle, published in May of 2023, so pretty recent, this meta-analysis focused on the cardiovascular impact of e-cigarette use. So we're going to start with that, with like effects on your heart. Then we'll get into other things too. So to start, I'd like to explain the known effects of nicotine specifically on the cardiovascular system. So nicotine, like we mentioned before, is the primary agent in vape juice. Generally, a smoker absorbs 1 to 2 milligrams of nicotine with each cigarette, like straight up regular tobacco cigarette, okay? The amount of nicotine in a vape varies on the brand. Most popular brands are either 0, which we won't really talk about, 10 milligrams per milliliter, or 20, milligrams per milliliter. So most of the disposable vapes are 2 mLs, okay? And they will give you 600 to 800 puffs. So they probably contain 20 to 40 milligrams of nicotine. So that's the same amount in 1 to 2 packs of cigarettes, okay? So one disposable vape, depending on the amount of or the concentration of the nicotine, is equivalent to 1 or 2 packs of cigarettes. Cool?
In terms of nicotine.
Nicotine delivery only. Gotcha. So nicotine is the main psychoactive chemical in cigarettes. It's a known vasoconstrictor, meaning it makes your blood vessels contract. That increases your blood pressure and your heart rate. These increases in those parameters can stress your cardiovascular system and increase your risk of heart attacks and strokes. This is documented everywhere for a long time. This is not something that we know only in the short term, okay? The CDC reports that e-cigarettes are associated with an increased risk also of cardiovascular disease, okay? And it's sort of like because of the nicotine, and then we'll also get into maybe because of other things too, all right? So in addition to the nicotine-related risks, vapes, which I'll call them, same thing as e-cigarettes for this discussion, can be harmful since some of the chemicals and particulates in the aerosol can damage the endothelium, which is like the lining of the blood vessels, leading to a buildup of like atherosclerotic plaque, so like hardening of the arteries, which can block and reduce blood flow, resulting in heart arrhythmias, strokes, and heart attacks. Okay?
So this is more than the nicotine. This is the stuff that could be just...
This is the other shit, yeah, which we'll get
into.
The
other shit that's... And I think a lot of times the thought process, at least even for myself, is thinking vape probably didn't have as much of this other shit as cigarettes. So it was like, oh, and it's just the nicotine and water, right? It's got to be that. So
it's not.
You've just squashed that.
Oh, I'll squash it even harder, baby. So this particular meta-analysis from Curious looked through initially 493 papers, and then because of exclusion criteria, ended up with 15 studies, which is so interesting to see how those processes happen. There were some pretty clear conclusions and some not so clear. So let's break it down. By one is risk of heart attack. If you compare tobacco smokers and vapers, the risk of heart attack was lower in vapers, okay? But it was still elevated than general population. So smokers had higher risk, but vapers still had risk. However, those who vaped had a higher risk of heart attack than those who had never vaped or had quit vaping at some point, okay? Kind of saying the same thing. Let's move on to arrhythmia risk, so dangerous heart rhythms, okay? Vapes with nicotine, which is what we're talking about today, changed the EKG index of repolarization. So basically, it changed some electrical activity parameters within the heart, which was comparable with cigarette smoking. So people that vaped and people that smoked had similar changes in their EKG that would be associated with arrhythmias. So this increased their risk of dangerous or ventricular arrhythmias and sudden death. So, taking a page from our discussion with our sports cardiology expert friend, Dr. John Dresner, in episode 62, which was called Why Are Athletes Experiencing Cardiac Arrest and Can We Prevent It? We already do a really crappy job at implementing mass screening for heart arrhythmias in young people. Dr. Dresner told us that 1 in 300 young athletes has a heart condition that puts them at risk for sudden cardiac arrest. So according to the FDA's 2023 National Youth Tobacco Survey, 2.1 million U.S. youth currently use e-cigarettes. So insert cringe emoji here. Oh, look at all these young people that may be at risk for arrhythmia.
Yeah, we've established that young people don't make the best decisions. See earlier in the episode of these two doctor friends with their... So predisposition followed by bad decisions.
Agreed.
Equals bad outcome.
Yeah.
Or in your case, cringe emoji.
Cringe emoji.
Understood.
That's probably going to be the last time I talk about inserting emojis, but I can't promise that. And then a smaller amount of studies, there's really one that talked about heart failure risk. So only one study in the last 5 years was included in this meta-analysis. And the data was kind of muddy for this one. There was a small sample size. But generally, the outcome was that nicotine in vapes increased the risk of worsening heart failure by increasing, like we talked about, your blood pressure and your heart rate. So the biggest risks associated with the heart problems were arrhythmias and heart attack and stroke. Okay. So that's the meta-analysis on cardiovascular risk. Jeremy, what's another bad health outcome you'd like to know about that might be associated with inhaling stuff?
My breathing. How does it affect my breathing?
Yes. Well, we'll skip to that. And then I'll come back to the thing that I thought you were going to answer.
Erectile dysfunction.
No, we'll get to it. So, yes, in this category, I wanted to shout out popcorn lung. Jeremy, do you know how the term popcorn lung came to exist?
Well, it doesn't look like popcorn in a lung.
That's what I thought, too. That is not the correct answer. It looks
educating your doctors since 2022.
It's actually because the chemical diacetyl was used for artificial butter flavoring. And in around 2007, there were 8 former workers of the Gilster Mary Lee popcorn plant in Jasper, Missouri, that developed bronchiolitis obliterans, or what's called popcorn lung. So it's called popcorn lung, not because it looks like popcorn. Maybe it does to some degree, but it's because it came from a people that worked in a popcorn factory, because this particular chemical, diacetyl, was used for this artificial butter flavoring.
Put it back in the times when margarine was all the rage. It's going to be better for you.
Right.
But butter's not good for you. It's a whole food that potentially has oils that can make you live longer. Let's bring out... It could make you fat, though.
Right.
So don't
That's
do that.
Way worse. No, no, no. Yeah.
So let's put out stuff like margarine and what sounds like this other thing
diacetyl.
That's giving us popcorn. Yeah, this was us. This was us when we were growing up, Julie. This is the crap we were eating.
Absolutely. Yeah, anal leakage, right? With Olestra.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. Didn't know any better.
No, they didn't. So this condition, bronchiolitis obliterans, or popcorn lung, it causes inflammation and destruction of the small airways, or the bronchioles. And it actually can be a result of many lung pathologies, including things like after an infection like measles, adenovirus, or flu. People that have connective tissue disorders or folks can have complications after they have a lung transplant or a bone marrow transplant. And then also reactions to inhaling toxic fumes. So e-cigarettes that use diacetyl, this buttery flavor, can increase risk of this condition, popcorn lung. Although this chemical is banned in the UK, but it's not banned in the US. To be clear, it's banned for use in food flavorings, but not in vape juice. The jury is still out on how many cases of popcorn lung are attributed to vaping. There was a 2016 article out of Harvard that was published in Environmental Health Perspectives Journal that found that diacetyl, that the popcorn butter thing, was found in 39 of 51 of the vape brands that they tested.
Wow. And is it something where if I went and bought a vape thing and looked in the back, there's an ingredients list so I could know?
Not always. It's poorly regulated. I mean, it's hard because it's regulated, but there's just so many different brands out there. So
right. Well, you just educated me. So if I'm a vapor listening to this episode or I know somebody, I'm like, you're going to educate me. So now I can make my better personal choices. So I'm not going to look for this popcorn lung diacetyl.
Yeah.
What's the second word?
It's just diacetyl. That's it.
Diacetyl.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go look for that. Is it? But you're saying it's not always on ingredients
Correct.
List. I can't like look.
Yeah, we'll get back into the ingredients list stuff when I go into my other topic. So the other lung issue I wanted to address is called VAPI or EVALI. So V-A-P-I or E-V-A-L-I, which stands for vaping associated pulmonary injury or e-cigarette / vaping associated lung injury. We'll call it VAPI, V-A-P-I. Okay. It can be a serious, life-threatening lung disorder. It mimics pneumonia, but doesn't respond to antibiotics. You have to treat it with, like, oxygen and steroids, which can help, but it is a scary lung condition that can lead to ARDS, or acute respiratory distress syndrome. Bad. The outbreak of VAPI began in summer 2019, although there were some cases that were found back in, like, 2012. And this outbreak began in Illinois and Wisconsin, so close to home to us, and killed 68 people in the U.S. from 2019 to 2020 and led to about 2,800 hospitalizations. This was the one that was linked to illegal and unrestricted cannabis vaping products, particularly those that used a different chemical called vitamin E acetate, okay? This has since been, well, we'll talk about it. There's been criminal cases for the people that distributed these types of, this was kind of like, this was a little bit of like blame the consumer. It was done by the government being like, well, you shouldn't be using vapes that you didn't buy from a store. It's people sharing vapes. It's people getting it from like black market sources. And it was usually in the THC containing type vape things. Okay. So there's criminal cases. There's lawsuits everywhere with this outbreak. So the cases of VAPI this type of lung injury have decreased quite a bit since this outbreak, but they still exist. And then the chemical, vitamin E acetate, is under scrutiny by the FDA, but is not fully banned in the U.S. It still exists places. If you recall, there was another big lung problem that happened in late 2019, early 2020, called COVID. So honestly, I'm not even going to get into the impact of vaping on COVID-19 lung illness. There's like too much to dive into there. But it was interesting that this kind of led up to the pandemic, but there was a huge outbreak that killed a lot of people, particularly that was just related to this really severe type of lung injury associated with this vitamin E acetate inside these kind of off-brand vape products. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think it's a hot take to say that inhaling shit might increase your risk of lung issues.
So, I think that's kind of where my head was at with this whole thing is that, you know, you have this, if you want to simplify it, tube into a balloon, right? You have your mouth and nose,
yeah.
And then it goes into a tube that then goes down into two lungs, which are kind of like balloons, and it's way more complicated than that. But all along this tube, you have things trying to keep stuff out. You have nose hairs, and you have little cilia, which are like the micro hairs that are trying to keep everything out of your lungs, because the lungs are delicate. They have these little small balloons. Think about them like little rooms that have like parchment paper on the walls. And bringing stuff into that room is bad for the room.
Right.
The room wants to be empty and clean. It wants to be like the filters that you see before you ever use them. And if you've ever taken a filter out of like your HVAC system or some sort of like air purifier when it's time to change it and looked at it, that's what happens when there's particles in the air. So we're buying these purifiers for our room so that we don't breathe these things, but then we also inhale things
right.
into it, particles that should not be going in there. So your whole body is designed to keep things out, but we insist on trying to put things in. So smoking's bad. We know that. People, generally speaking, even cigarette smokers know they're doing something bad for their body. But vaping is why this episode exists. I think people thought to themselves, maybe I can still get the associate, you know, get the drug or the high mm-hmm. or the habit without the consequences. But anytime you're inhaling something into your lungs that's not meant to be there, you risk damaging what I would consider probably to be the most important organs in your body.
Right.
I mean, every organ is important, but I think if your lungs are not functioning, you're not going very far. So I think that you nailed that inhaling stuff. Anytime that you take something into your mouth and inhale it, you should assume that there's going to be an effect of that. Same way if you take a steroid inhaler.
Right.
Like, you're doing that hopefully for a reason, and that is going to lead to a positive outcome. But if you were doing it, you know, without a good reason, in theory, you could cause problems with that.
Right.
And also we look at the environment. We think about all the bad, you know, we weren't allowed to go outside on that bad air day
right.
with Brady because we didn't want to be inhaling
this,
you know, the negative stuff for our lungs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do this on a regular basis, I don't care how pure it is, unless it's pure water vapor that is in distilled water so that it doesn't have any of the bad stuff there. And water, again, is hydrogen and oxygen, which are the two things we breathe anyways.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be probably some consequence to it.
Yeah. What do you think that other health risk outcome that I might be discussing could be that could be a longer term problem with inhaling stuff?
And it was not erectile dysfunction, you said.
It's cancer, Jeremy. I'm talking about cancer risk, dork. Well, so unfortunately, the data on that one is a lot more limited, kind of like what we talked about before, because these products have not been around all that long in the grand scheme of things. So particularly due to the novelty of vapes. Quick history lesson. When was the first vape introduced and who invented it? If you had to take a guess, when did the first vape come out?
1940.
No, 2003. By a guy named Lick Hong. He was a Chinese chemist from Hong Kong. So 2003. And then they got real big in I'd say the teens and then into the, and they just, to be honest, keep getting bigger. And we'll talk about the trends as well.
Yeah, I feel like the definition there probably has to depend upon probably some sort of battery operated vaping thing.
Sure.
Because you could make vapor to inhale.
Certainly. Yeah. But when it came out as like a device that it was, you know, for personal use and then they got into all the disposables. And I won't get into all the different generations of them and how some of them have refillable things and cartridges. We'll get into that a little bit, but I don't want this to be 3 hours long.
I figured there was somebody in like the 0.1% back in the 1940s that came up with their own device. That's where my head went.
Yeah, like the guy that discovered aspartame by like just like picking up his cigarette that was on the bench and noticing that it tasted sweet because that's how he did stuff back then. All right. An article in Advances in Respiratory Medicine, pretty recent from December 2023, gave me lots of information about the aggregated data on vaping and cancer risks. And I'll sort of sum those up for you now. So here's the general summation of their main findings. They say, due to the possibility of dangerous chemicals and flavorings in the aerosol, there's evidence that suggests that using e-cigarettes may raise the risk of cancer as well as other ailments, including cardiovascular and respiratory disease, like we talked about. It's crucial to use caution when utilizing e-cigarettes and to think about other options for quitting smoking. So while nicotine itself is not generally considered a direct carcinogen, although, I don't know, I came across some data here and there that it has more of a role in cancer development than previously thought, but in general, it's not classified as a carcinogen. It sure does like to hang out with a bunch of really nasty players often.
Mm-hmm. So, it's got bad friends.
Yes. I want to talk about the friends that are in vape juice, okay? The bad actors here. Number one, propylene glycol and vegetable glycerin. So here's like the main four things that are in most vapes. If you were going to look at the back of a vape cartridge packaging, it would probably say propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, nicotine, and flavorings. That's pretty much all you're going to get. So let's break that down quickly. So the heating or aerosolization of vape juice, which again, we'll talk about better words for these things, especially when we're marketing them to children, but we'll call it vape juice right now. The components can break down into carcinogenic chemicals, including formaldehyde and acetaldehyde. So that's from the propylene glycol. And something called acrolein, which is from the glycerin, the vegetable glycerin. So formaldehyde and acetaldehyde suck. We're not going to talk about them. They are known carcinogens. It's clearly all these things depend on, like we've learned from our friends on Unbiased Science and Examine.com and everybody else. Dose matters, exposure matters, okay?
Correct.
Clearly. So that's what we're, you know, but formaldehyde is bad for you. The end. And it causes cancer and we know this. We don't have to talk about it. Acrolein is another bad actor, a particularly bad actor. It's a known carcinogen that's in tobacco smoke. We know this. And some studies even show that there's higher doses of this, of acrolein, in vape aerosol than in cigarette smoke. So this is a bad actor, causes cancer, and it's also in most vape products to some degree. It's hard to know how much you're getting when you're inhaling it, but the answer is some, and this chemical sucks. All right. The other stuff that's in there are heavy metals. So again, smaller trace degrees, but again, like you were talking about before, like the more, you know, people that usually vape are not doing it once a year. They may be doing it once a day or 55 times a day. You know, you have one disposable vape cartridge, you get 600 to 800 puffs out of it, right? So heavy metals like lead, chromium, cadmium, nickel, manganese, they've been found in cigarette smoke and vape aerosols, and they all carry carcinogenic risk, again, based on dose and exposure. However, it's really hard to determine how much is in each vape and how much is necessary in dose and exposure to increase your cancer risk. But they're there, and we know it. Got it?
Yeah, it's interesting because, so the dose and exposure really does matter, and we've emphasized that. And so, but the circumstance is different here because in other episodes or in other circumstances where we're talking dose and exposure, sometimes these things are showing up in foods. They're showing up in things that we use on a regular basis. They're showing up in, I don't know, air, things that you have no conscious choice to a certain extent of whether you're consuming them or you thought you were consuming something safe.
Skittles.
And it was in there.
AstroTurf.
And sure. Yeah. We were just trying to play baseball. The point being is that the dose and exposure matters there because those things may show up even when you're doing everything correct because of the world that we live in. And if you don't pay attention to dose and how much you're exposed to it, we would think we were getting poisoned all the time. But we know that we're not because our bodies filter these things and in small amounts, they don't cause problems. In this case,
right. You
are comparing it to something we do know causes a lot of damage and is not life-sustaining in any way. And anybody who smokes a cigarette today, for the most part, I think everybody knows that that is not healthy.
It's like not it a health-promoting behavior. Yes, exactly.
No.
Yeah.
I think anyone who smokes a cigarette knows that it is bad for them when they do it.
Yeah.
And so when you're comparing vape to cigarettes and you're saying dose and exposure matter, this still matters of like, am I getting less or more than a cigarette? Because many people who are vaping are doing it to replace something we know is bad, and they don't need to vape either.
Right.
Vaping is a conscious act of inhaling something that you do not need to be inhaling, and you did not consume unknowingly.
Right.
You know, it wasn't brought upon you.
Yeah, there was some consent. There was some informed consent to some degree. But this is the
point
of this.
And even more informed consent after you give us all the information.
Exactly. Thank you for the segue. Just to wrap up the cancer part, in general, this particular study cited articles and case studies, kind of like lower level evidence, that raised concerns for increased risk of the following cancers: head and neck, lung, bladder, and breast. But basically, we need more like time and more study to form any definitive conclusions about vaping and cancer. Cool?
Yeah. I mean, 2004, you said, was when the first one came out, right?
03. Same thing. Whatever.
03. So like 21 years. Song. So there's probably some cancers that have developed from that. But again, like, when did mass usage start? Probably, what, 10 years after that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, 10 years is not enough time to probably develop a lot of the cancers that we're going to be seeing. In addition, as you've already expressed and we've talked about, age matters. I don't think you're seeing a lot of 60-year-olds get together and vape. Like, a lot of times these are younger people who are doing this vaping, and for them to develop cancer may happen later on. So, yeah, I think the answer to that is to be determined, but I don't feel like either of us is confident it's going to be a good outcome.
Agreed. Again, not a hot take. All right, are you ready to move on to chapter two?
I think I'm ready to move on to chapter two.
I mean, I'll always go back if you want to. All right, chapter two is this harm reduction? Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
this is a good question, right? Because I think a lot, even as physicians, we were like, okay, this person clearly is not going to quit smoking.
Right.
They have established it.
Right.
But if I got them to vape, did I at least make them a little bit healthier?
Yeah. And I'll explain to you that the answer is probably some degree of yes. Okay. So, but it depends on the delta, right? How much reduction in harm is enough to recommend vaping as a smoking cessation or smoking replacement aid? So some background information just about statistics and epidemiology, okay? The WHO, so the World Health Organization, estimates that there are 1.1 billion tobacco smokers in the world, and smoking attributes roughly 7 million deaths annually in the world because of smoking, okay? Vaping, as a behavior, has exploded in recent years, with sales increasing by 47% from 2020 to 2022. All right. So not like, 2013 to 2017, like in pandemic. Okay. With current estimates of 22 million units sold every month in the US. Got it?
Got it.
Gross. I got some great information from a literature review article from March of 2022 from the Tobacco Use Insights Journal. And much of the aggregated current research addresses the pressing concerns of the following things, okay? The epidemic of adolescent use with the risk of nicotine addiction, which we'll kind of get into in chapter three. The known and potential harms from vaping, which we sort of touched on already. The overall risks to public health, which is sort of what we're talking about now. And then just general unanswered questions about the effectiveness of e-cigarettes as a harm reduction tool for tobacco smokers, which is exactly what we're talking about. So there was a study I wanted to talk about briefly, talked about dual use, right? So people that smoke and vape, which is very, very common. So dual use of vapes and tobacco cigarettes is very common. So about 49% in this study of U.S. vapers also smoke cigarettes. There's also a Korean study of 7,500 men that showed that these dual users, smokers and vapers, had higher cardiovascular risks compared to vape-only or cigarette-only people. So if you're doing both, you have higher risk. And a lot of people are doing
comment,
both. Yeah.
Does it comment on why people are doing, like, are people getting that much more? It's like, I'm smoking both because when I'm outside, I can smoke, but when I'm inside,
that's probably a big
vape.
Part of it, is that
I can now,
yes.
So now you're getting more?
Yep. Or like you just have better access to it. So you might be able to vape in more environments in which you couldn't smoke.
Yeah.
Or you just have like
on
one
that.
Tastes less gross or makes you smell less bad, that kind of stuff. Overall, the consensus is that vaping alone presents less harm to blood pressure and heart rate than like cigarettes, like smoking cigarettes. Okay. However, we need more head-to-head studies to like actually to really shake this out if that's a true effect or if it's, but there's some studies that suggest it, saying like, okay, you have less blood pressure and heart rate problems when you're just vaping as compared to smoking. However, vapes vary in their nicotine concentration and can be way higher in their nicotine concentration than cigarettes, right? Like people who vape might vape more than people who smoke, but there's a huge heterogeneity of people of how much they smoke and how much they vape. But vaping is like, quote unquote, a little bit easier to an extent. You can do it more places. It's less
gross.
Well,
nicotine is a stimulant. So it's like our caffeine episode. It's like I can have a regular cup of coffee or I can go get a supercharged Starbucks.
Right, exactly.
And you're like, do I know what I'm consuming? Did I look at how much is in there? Do I know how much that affects me?
Yeah, talking about dose and exposure, right? The data on e-cigarettes as an effective and safe harm reduction strategies for like people that smoke, users of regular combustible cigarettes, these studies are often complicated and sometimes contradictory, which is annoying. There's some recent evidence that supports the use of e-cigarettes for smoking cessation. This was sort of like, again, looking at that big aggregate of a literature review. And again, I'll link everything in the show notes. There's going to be so many links in the show notes, guys. So if you guys want to read these studies, feel free. However, there's data that shows that the use of e-cigarettes persists after people quit smoking. So like they quit smoking cigarettes, but they're still vaping, which is not without risk. Dual use is very common. Like that one study showed that basically 50% of people are doing both. And like the full extent of the risks is very much unknown, especially with like arrival of novel devices to the marketplace with have vast variation in their vape liquid and their ingredients and their nicotine concentration. So there's just like it's too much to take into account to some degree. There was a 2020 Italian study. It had about 1,000 participants. Some were vapers, some were smokers, some were dual users. And they were looking at smoking cessation and tobacco harm reduction over 6 years, okay? And it showed that there was no improvement in vapers or dual users with respect to smoking cessation rates or harm reduction. So basically they're saying people that both vaped or vaped and smoked over 6 years didn't quit smoking more or have reductions in harm, which was done by like looking at self-report of their health status, hospitalizations, and then incidence of possible smoking-related disease. So this was one study. It was relatively recent. It was pretty big. It looked relatively valid.
Yeah, and the quit smoking included, like, if you were still vaping, they didn't consider that quit smoking.
No, they considered just smoking cessation. Like, it didn't it didn't help as much. Like, there wasn't really a big difference, at least in this study, with people that wanted to quit smoking tobacco combustible cigarettes. It didn't help them.
So if somebody went from a cigarette smoker to a vapor, so they did quit smoking cigarettes, that did not qualify.
Correct. That was, like, considered a plus, right.
Understood.
Very little difference between people that used it as a smoking cessation aid, okay? However, counterpoint, there's also an increasing body of evidence that suggests the opposite, that vaping could be a viable smoking cessation tool. There was a 2019 New England Journal of Medicine study from the UK by Hajek et al. That actually showed double the quit rates for people using vapes compared to other nicotine replacement therapy. So 19% of people using vapes versus 8.8% of people using like other stuff like gums and patches and stuff like that, other nicotine replacement at 1 year out. So both quit strategies, however, were accompanied by behavioral support. So whether or not you vaped or whether or not you used like gums, patches, other nicotine replacement, you still also had behavioral support. But so that, you know, was same for the both groups, but the vape group had double the rate of quitting after a year. However, 80% of vapers were still vaping at 1 year out versus 9% of nicotine replacement users. So like of that group that didn't, you know, only had half of the quit smoking rates, only 9% of them vaped, if that makes sense.
So if you use the finish line that the Italian study used, this study shows that vaping did not help them quit because they were still vaping.
Right. But they quit smoking cigarettes more, which again, like if we're talking lesser of two evils.
Right. But have we established that it's the lesser two evils? Because the Italian study said it wasn't the lesser for harm reduction. So I think that's the confusing part here is like, where's the finish line?
Yeah.
The finish line is so interesting here.
I think, again, it's hard to talk about, and there's so much data out there, I couldn't possibly get into all of it. But I do think that there is a general consensus in the medical community that vaping, as it stands right now with the data that we have, has less clear connection to the adverse outcomes that we see in combustible cigarette smoking. But we also don't have very much data. This stuff hasn't been around very long, and we don't know the long-term cancer risk like you talked about. So it is tricky. It's like, how do you determine if this is the lesser of two evils? There's just like not enough data to tell you yet, but there's also a lot of evil in it and a lot of just, it's not good. So in my mind, I think when we'll get to the end of all of this, you know, we'll come up to our conclusions and recommendations.
Seems the hot take here is, believe it or not, treatment should be individualized to the person. Some people may do better with vaping to quit, and other people may do better with other things. And some people would do terrible with vaping because you're just replacing one for the other, and then you can do hybrid where you can have both. So hybrid work may be better. Hybrid cigarette and vaping, not so great.
Yeah. There was a 2021 Cochrane review. There was 59 studies. So this is a high quality evidence. Okay. 29 of those studies were randomized controlled trials, which we've talked about before are high quality evidence. And this was regarding vaping and smoking cessation. This had in general, this whole review, this Cochrane review had 12,000 participants. Okay. These were studies that showed comparing vaping with a few different other quit smoking strategies, okay? One was Chantix or varenicline. You've heard of that before. Like a lot of people heard of Chantix. It's a, you know, pretty well-established, good quit smoking aid, okay? Nicotine replacement therapy, like we talked about, so like patches and gums and things like that. And then nicotine-free e-cigarettes. So just none of the nicotine, all of the rest of it, I don't know. And then behavioral support or just like no smoking cessation support whatsoever as like a control group, okay? The authors concluded that vaping had increased quit rates at 6 months out compared to the other methods. Quit rates of smoking cigarettes, okay? To be very clear. There weren't any adverse effects. I mean, like outside of just general health things, you know, like between the groups, there wasn't one group that did more poorly health-wise than the others. Okay. However, the asterisk here is that the Cochrane group, they acknowledged the rapidly changing data in this area regarding sort of the public health impact. And their suggestion is to seek to implement a, quote, living systematic review and to update it frequently. Although this is from 2021 and I couldn't find what they were like, we're going to update this monthly, and I didn't really see that was happening. And maybe it's just hard to publish those things so quickly, unless you're curious, I suppose.
Through all this, nice, the curious journal, I see what you did there. Through all these studies, did they mention anywhere about like the vaping, where the people were getting the vape in terms of like, was this a controlled prescribed vape, or this is I was going to the gas station and still picking up my vape? Do you get what I mean by that?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look through every single one of the studies. Yes. I don't know. I think on the whole, if I had to look through the data, it was probably just like people that self-reported purchasing it from a retailer.
Which is probably better.
Yeah, that's indicative of the general population as opposed to like when we talked about our psychedelics study where they were giving people doses of psilocybin.
Pure shit.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
That makes a lot of sense.
So would you like the skinny, Jeremy, on the harm reduction based on what I was able to find? Okay, here's the skinny. The existing evidence suggests that exposure to the toxicants and carcinogens from e-cigarettes is most likely less harmful than that from combustible tobacco products. Okay? Does that make sense?
Okay.
So it's probably less bad than smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, so if Uncle Ned is a cigarette smoker, right, but I get him to be a vapor, I probably have helped Uncle Ned a little bit. We just don't know how much.
Right. This does not indicate that e-cigarettes are harmless. Okay. The evidence is mounting that for some long-term users of traditional combustible tobacco, so like long-term smokers, or people that are really at high risk, so like long-term users, those with chronic diseases, this might be helpful in reducing harm as a suitable approach to smoking, especially if they failed other methods. So kind of what you said before, like Uncle Ned, if he's you know, recalcitrant to quitting or has tried to quit 100 times and has tried other things. And then you're like, hey, Uncle Ned, maybe try this vape. It feels the same and you still get the nicotine delivery. And you're 68 years old and you already have emphysema to some degree. Like, maybe it's a good option for Uncle Ned, potentially. Make sense?
I think the money here is going to be your chapter three, because very few people are starting this habit after the age of 30, I'm going to say, and saying, right. I just wanted to pick this up. I finally made it to my 30s. I want to focus on myself. I mean, 30s is where people start to like look at their lives and they start to say, like, you know, how am I going to be? What's my long term future? How am I going to be healthy? They start feeling even a little bit mortal because they sometimes have children, or they start thinking beyond themselves.
Yeah.
Right. You just don't have. We've done supplement episodes on people trying to live forever.
Right.
It's very rare that somebody's like, I'm going to go buy collagen, greens powders and all these other things, but I'm also going to start vaping or smoking. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So the question is, when is the habit starting? And the habit is starting when people are young. This is high school and college kids that are starting these habits.
Yeah.
And so your chapter three is really going to be the, how is this affecting our children and the long term, you know. Sure, if I took 68-year-old Uncle Ned and told him, you know, stop smoking your cigarettes that you started smoking back when it was, you know, John Hamm was doing his show in Mad Men, and
yeah.
we all thought it was fine, and there were doctors smoking and tipping their cigarettes on top of, like, trays
right.
while they were having conversations with a cancer patient across the, you know, the desk for them. You should switch if you're not going to stop at all, or, like, transition because it's better for you. But the 16-year-old who picks up a vape right now, that is a potential long-term risk.
Right.
And that is who we need to be focusing on right now. And so chapter three, I think, is your...
Yes.
This is your piece de la resistance.
It is. This is the end point. Yeah. Chapter three, how can we protect young people and vulnerable populations? I wanted to be very, very clear on this point, okay? I remember when we talked about a similar issue in December, which was at the end of our episode, it was 82, how much caffeine is too much caffeine? And we talked about the progress, or lack thereof, of the FDA to ban menthol and other flavoring in tobacco products in hopes of making cigarettes and flavored cigars less mm-hmm. appealing to young people and potentially save lives. We talked about how these products are particularly heavily marketed toward Black youth. And the FDA estimates that 300,000 to 600,000 smoking attributable deaths overall, of which those would be 92,000 to 238,000 among Black people, would be avoided over the course of 40 years. So this shit is done on purpose and targets specific people on purpose, right? So let's get into that and how we can combat that, or at least be aware of it, all right? Just as a little aside, as of an article that I read in CNN in this January 24th of this year, the FDA still hasn't achieved this goal of banning menthol on a national level. However, bright side, there's a full ban in place in a few states, Massachusetts, California, New Jersey, New York, Rhode Island. And there's restricted use in 190 cities, of which Chicago is one.
What do all those cities and states share in common? Jesus.
Well, Chicago has, it's interesting. We have a comprehensive e-cigarette flavor ban. So like pretty much all flavors. But restrictions on like other tobaccos apply only to retailers within 500 feet of high schools. But then this is what I didn't understand. They exempt adult-only tobacco retailers, which is not all of them? I don't get it. Maybe it's like 21 plus as opposed to 18 plus. But I didn't understand what the adult-only tobacco retailers meant. I was like, what? That, whatever. But you can't sell flavored vapes within 500 feet of a school, which I guess is nice. All right. I'd love to focus on a very recent article and discussion of this article in the Pediatrics Journal. This was from March 11th, 2024. Okay. This is sort of what made me want to talk about this whole episode in the first place, because this came across my inbox. This study focused on disposable e-cigarette use and the subsequent use patterns in adolescents and young adults in the U.S. This was namely in Southern California, okay? So this study was done by USC. It had over 400 14 to 18-year-olds, which they called adolescents, and then 21 to 24-year-olds, which they called young adults. I don't know why they don't care about anybody who's 19 and 20 years old, but they weren't in this study. So this population who used e-cigarettes within the past 30 days, and they took baseline data and then data again at 8 months. All right? You got me here? So these mm-hmm. were young people, 400 young people in Southern California, with a pretty heterogeneous background, Adolescent, 14 to 18 years old. Young adult was 21 to 24. They used e-cigarettes within the past month. And so they took data at day one and at 8 months later. So their conclusions were that the baseline use of, this is very specifically disposable. So ones that you buy them like one-time use, but really like the 600, 800 puffs use, and you throw it away, not one that you refill all the time.
I.e. more affordable.
More affordable, probably easier to hide. Yeah, you can buy them more readily, the kind of that kind of stuff. So the disposable versus a multi-use was associated with higher incidence of continued vape use and higher times per day use. So if you use disposable ones, you kept using them and you use them more frequently throughout the day. All right. And these are usually ones that are marketed to young people because of their accessibility, portability, and cost. Disposable e-cigarettes are also subject to fewer regulations than the non-disposable products, which are often more expensive and have to be charged. So they're easier
to get
and they're less
regulated.
Stupid. And then also disposable e-cigarettes usually contain solutions with higher concentrations of nicotine, which also
of course
result,
they do.
Yes. So they're worse. And then there was a really great commentary on the study. So this was the study. It said like, yeah, these things suck. They're terrible and they're marketed towards young people for a lot of different reasons that are very much on purpose. The commentary on the study that was published in the same Pediatrics Journal edition in March of, you know, this year, just a couple weeks ago. And this was by Robert Jackler, MD, and Bonnie Halpern-Felcher, PhD. They're both of Stanford. And they throw some mad shade on tobacco and vape companies for their misleading and predatory marketing of these products, particularly to young people. So some big points. Tobacco companies have thankfully seen a steady decline in traditional tobacco sales. Yay, right? Like, we could all agree that people are smoking cigarettes less, at least in the U.S. There's data to support that. I didn't really touch on it, but trust me on this one, okay? Therefore, these companies have diversified their nicotine product lines. So they're not selling cigarettes. They got to sell something. They're marketing these as reduced risk alternatives, which is why that was our, when I asked you, like, what are your thoughts about this? It was my same thought, too. And to some extent, it's not untrue. It's just not very true.
It is untrue.
Yes.
It just depends on where your starting line is.
I know, exactly.
It's not a risk reducer if you were never using in the first place.
It's a risk reducer for Uncle Ned, not for, the kid.
The 17-year-old high school student who's
Correct.
Never used a cigarette a day in their life and
right.
says cigarettes are gross, who picks up a bubblegum flavored thing and says, ooh, that was fun, and I did it socially, and now, you know.
Yeah. It's
like
you
the
with
word
the hookah.
Gateway drug was used all the time. Yes, me with the hookah.
It's Jeremy with hookah in 2006 or whatever time frame that would be.
Yeah, very regrettable 45 days of my life.
Many of these products have become popular among your set. You're like, exactly right. Non-smoking adolescents and young people and are potential gateways to nicotine dependence. That was the big crux of this article. But the biggest crux is I want you to talk here, but we're going to talk about what's the right language here, because you know how much we love language. The authors of this commentary suggest replacing the deceptive jargon with more helpful and transparent terminology that more clearly conveys the risk of nicotine addiction and its health consequences. Consequences. Let's learn some new language, shall we? All right. So let's learn some new language, shall we? Okay, Jeremy, I'm going to give you the not so great term that is deemed, by, at least by the authors of this article from Stanford, to be misleading or predatory. And then you can guess maybe what the alternative, better, more transparent language should be. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Vape or vape stick.
So instead of saying vape or vape stick, I assume I should probably use something that has the word cigarette in it.
Yes. Because cigarettes, we have a known connotation
it's
with young people that they're gross. Yeah, exactly. So
yes.
E-cigarette, like I've said a million times today, or nicotine device is the other one. I think they want to be very transparent. Like, these are nicotine delivery systems. Because some kids don't really know that. They think it might just be like a nice tasting blowy thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, the vape is kind of analogous to cig back when Joe Cool back in the 1960s was laying on a brick wall and it was like, hey, can I bum a cig? And like, that was a cool thing. Now it's like vape or like,
yeah.
I don't hear vape stick all that often.
Yeah. Like slang for cigarettes. Like, can I bum a square or can I, you know, like whatever.
Yeah. But now cigarettes are not cool.
No.
And you're like, can I bum a cig? And they're like,
ew,
get away from
get
me.
Get out of here. Yeah.
But the vape thing is now the cool thing. So I agree. Yeah.
Yep.
By adding the word cigarette to it, certainly won't help you sell any vape sticks, though.
No. That's the whole point. We don't need to help them do that. They're doing fine on their own. $22 million a month, baby. All right. How about just the term vapor?
Smoke?
Sort of, yeah. Nicotine aerosol or mist. How about
mist.
Vape store?
Cigarette store?
Yeah, tobacco store.
Smoke shop?
Smoke shop, yeah. I think those would all be good. How about vape juice or e-juice or e-liquid?
Something that doesn't make a kid want to drink it.
They call it nicotine.
How about...
Yeah, nicotine liquid. What
is something we all want our kids to drink and then they refuse to drink it, so we should call it that?
Just water. Just straight up regular ass water. This is an interesting one because these next two are terms that I wasn't aware of because I don't do this stuff. But so there's a, it says in quotes of like, heat not burn. That was a term that was created by Philip Morris International. And they're talking about like vape and like tobacco alternatives. The authors say we should call this heated tobacco. And then the other one, it's very similar. It's like H-E-E-T-S, so like heats or heat sticks. They want them to be called tobacco sticks. Okay.
And are these regulated? So what I mean directly, my question is let's just say, for example, that this was recommended and some regulatory agency said this is a good idea. Is there somebody who could say to the e-cigarette companies, like, you can't use these terms on your packaging. You have to use these terms.
Not that I saw yet.
So like the FDA or somebody couldn't, I mean, like who said that they couldn't sell cigarettes? Who had to put the warning sign on cigarettes? You know, like the warning label?
Right. The one that says like, or like, especially like in other countries, it like shows pictures of disease lungs. It says like, this will kill you and is bad for you. And it's all over it. Yeah. That's not on any of this packaging. And that's, think about this. This article that's coming out with this table and list of what we should be calling this came out 2 weeks ago, Jeremy.
Yeah, but let's think about this rationally, right? The companies don't want to make less money. That is a very bad business strategy.
Sure.
When you have a company and you have people working for you, and you have, generally speaking, boards and you have shareholders, the goal is to show up and say, we're making more money for everybody and everybody's happy. So if the regulation comes down to saying we need to change these terms so less kids use them, so less people buy them, no company is going to do that unless it is regulated upon them.
Right. Exactly. And that's really what this commentary is getting at. And probably every other article that comes out in pediatrics is saying similar things too. Okay.
Well, while I'm on my public policy, what do you step on?
Soapboxes.
I'm on my soapbox of public policy. I think we also need to discuss where you should be able to use these, because a lot of the progress we made with cigarettes was when we stopped letting people use them in public places.
Right.
You know, when you remember when I was a host at a restaurant in high school, there was a smoking section.
Yeah, certainly.
And guess what separated that smoking section from the non-smoking section?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Right.
There was a table on one side of a wall, a half wall.
Yes.
That was a smoking table. And on the other side of that half wall was a non-smoking table.
Right.
And it was air between them.
Mm-hmm.
That existed.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I mean, like, if you presented that to a 14-year-old today, they'd be like, what do you mean?
What do you mean? It's
like
a
people
rotary
smoked
phone.
In there?
Yeah.
People smoked on airplanes.
I know.
I mean, like, we let people, you hotbox that. Like, so do we allow people to smoke? Like, is there regulation on e-cigarettes on where you can smoke them? Can I smoke them in a movie theater or in a restaurant?
I don't know. I think it depends on, those are local / state laws. To my understanding, I don't know if there's a federal law about it. Who just got in trouble? Was it which congressperson who went to go see Beetlejuice and was vaping and got kicked out?
I don't know. But
it was Lauren Boebert.
E-cigarette use will no longer be permitted in indoor public places in Illinois beginning January 1st, 2024 under a new state law signed by Governor Pritzker.
So Illinois,
smoke-free indoor air laws, including e-cigarette from the CDC. All right, here's a map. So prohibits indoor smoking only. So there's three categories.
Mm-hmm.
No comprehensive smoke-free law or prohibition of indoor e-cigarette use. Prohibits indoor smoking only. And then prohibits indoor smoking and indoor e-cigarette use.
Mm-hmm.
So in the United States, it appears that... Wow. This is really interesting. I thought this would be way more. There's still a bunch of states that allow you to smoke indoors.
Mm-hmm. I remember for a long time it would be in Indiana. Like we had friends, you know, that we would go out to restaurants or go out to bars with when I was younger. not even that long ago, that you could still smoke in Indiana bars and restaurants, and we would just, that's another reason for me not to go to Indiana.
This is an interesting site. I'll put this for your show notes, but there's at least 10 states here, maybe more, that still have no comprehensive law that says you can't smoke indoors, which is crazy to me. But for the e-cigarette one specifically, so like you cannot smoke indoors with an e-cigarette, I see 12-ish. 12 states.
Including our state, which this just happened as statewide.
Yeah, so and on this website, actually, it doesn't say it. Okay. So it's not updated to include Illinois. This is as of September 30th, 2023.
Okay.
So, but that's really interesting because that's my, I think my point here is we're not going to see less e-cigarette use until people are told they can't use it in places where they want to be.
Certainly.
Well, my latter question there is, have you ever been around somebody who smokes these and then they just blow it out and it's like right next to you and it's like in your face? And like, did you see anything on secondhand e-cigarette smoke?
There was quite a bit about it. I didn't delve into it because this was already very long, but there are documented risks of secondhand vape, but less data and less effect than secondhand combustible tobacco smoke.
Because those are the two things that are going to win here. This is the same playbook that happened to cigarettes.
Right.
When it's damaging kids and when it's damaging people who are not making the personal decision of using it.
Right.
Because we can't tell you as a 45-year-old, I mean, we're nothing more than this country loves than freedom to do whatever you want as a human being. So when you are of age, you can do whatever you want in these situations. We can't tell you how to use your money. If you're dumb with your money, do dumb stuff. And we're only allowing more things like addictive behaviors like gambling, which is growing and growing. I mean, like we're seeing so much more gambling addiction because we allow it. So the point being is if we start to see more studies that say secondhand smoke of vaping causes problems to those people, see ya.
Yeah. Certainly.
I mean, like there's no way that, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
I listed there was like 14 states that didn't allow people that still allow people to smoke indoors, but I still feel like people are not really doing it in those states.
Yeah.
That I, at least not from what I've seen, maybe in specific establishments. Like dive bars that or whatever that people still go to, but you also know it is.
Yeah.
You're not going to a family restaurant and people are just puffing up cigarettes throughout this country, I don't think, anymore. So
I don't know. I feel like we're pretty insulated in where we live to not have to deal with it. But again, you know, it may just be that I'm in a little bit of a smoke echo chamber to some degree. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
All right, off my soapbox.
No, you're fine. The last few terms, I'm not going to make you guess because it's too tricky, and I think it's just interesting to make the point. One term was called smoke-free tobacco, and they were saying that like free suggests freedom from harm, which is not appropriate for use in nicotine products. So calling it smoke-free tobacco is misleading and predatory. The term non-menthol, so kind of going back to our menthol cigarette ban and the ban of like flavorings in e-cigarettes, which has been sort of a partial-ish ban. It's an industry term. It's used in places where menthol is banned, and it's deceptive because it suggests that it's itself a menthol substitute. It's not. It's like saying like lab tested on your supplement, where it's like, what lab? Like, it's just like, it means nothing. And it's predatory.
No, it's a label that basically says, at least we're not them.
Right. I'm adhering to the bare standards. Yeah, right. The last one was terms like innovative or high tech or intelligent or novel or emerging. It's the same old shit as everything else. It basically, like when Juul called itself the iPhone, well, I don't know if it called itself, but there was a Wired article about it that when it, like in 2016 or something, it's called it the iPhone of e-cigarettes. The good thing is if you read or watch the documentary about Juul had a huge peak and then they failed. I mean, they're still around and I think they're still making money, but they had a peak of like being worth $38 billion. And because of regulations and lawsuits and, you know, bad practices, if you look at their website, the first thing you come across is them being like, we adhere to harm reduction and making sure adolescents don't get this. And it's like, yeah, of course you do. Sure. Keep calling it innovative and new and tech and E and all that stuff.
I think that there's a lot to that. I mean, these things can be designed to be beautiful. They have like LED lights on them that change colors. They are sleek. I've seen them honestly like look like beautiful Zippo lighters or even like, yeah, they have screens on them. I mean, you're probably not too far away from them having games that you can play on the side of it. Like it's going to have a camera pretty soon. Like it's just, you can put a package on these that make people want them. And again, like, who are we advertising it to?
Young people.
Exactly.
I'm on my last page here, Jeremy. We're getting to the end, I promise you. So even the technical term for vapes, which is called ENDS or ENDS, electronic nicotine delivery systems, is misleading, especially to young people, because it implies that it's tobacco cessation or avoidance, like, effective. Like, oh, it's...
Yeah, they just wanted a good acronym.
Exactly. Just like papers that come out that they're called something that the acronym doesn't make any sense. All right. So I know I said vape like 10,000 times in this episode, but the authors recommend using e-cigarette instead of vape and nicotine inhaling versus vaping. So just being very clear about that. Real quick, I wanted to talk about the FDA did enact a quote-unquote partial ban, which really just sounds like a very milquetoast enforcement of restrictions on like sweet or fruity flavors of flavored e-cigarettes that were not categorized as just like tobacco or menthol flavored. This happened in early 2020, okay? So there was a JAMA article in August of 2023 that looked at data collected between 2019, before the restrictions, to 2021, after the restrictions, in over 8,700 U.S. youth. They were aged 12 to 17. The number of participants ranged from 5,000 to 8,700 kids. It varied on the year, whether or not they were looking at them in 2019 or 2021, okay? But thousands of kids. And they found that there was no difference in e-cigarette continuation rates between young people who used sweet or like cartridge, like flavored e-cigarettes, and youth that used other flavor or device combinations. And it also says that more than 75% of youth who initiated or continued e-cigarette use in 2021 used flavor and device combinations and brands that were not included in the enforcement priorities of, you know, so basically the ban did nothing. It didn't change how kids utilize these or what flavors they used because it was not a great ban and it didn't do anywhere near enough to actually curb this. It was flaccid in its attempts. Understood?
Yeah, but also I think the most important ban that there is.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I'm not saying don't do anything.
You were not. Right? I'm not. I'm certainly not saying that you were saying that.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, like this ban makes the most sense and the lowest hanging fruit.
I agree.
Take the flavors away. Julie, do you drink coffee?
I do.
Did you start drinking coffee plain black when you first started drinking coffee?
I'm weird. I don't think I drank it black, but I just drank it with like half and half or milk.
I think the vast majority of people, when they start drinking coffee, do not start with like
yeah, they might have
black
like
coffee.
A fun latte or like a frappuccino-y kind of thing.
Yeah,
or,
these days, how many high school kids and even younger to a certain extent do you see in Starbucks getting things that are just full of oat milk and such, but there's caffeine in it, right? And so they become addicted to caffeine the same way you can become addicted to any drug, right? But it's because it's got tons of caramel and whatever in it.
Sure.
But why do people start drinking black coffee as they get older?
Easier delivery, cheaper, faster.
Cheaper.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So again, like the kids are not going to start vaping things that taste like cigarettes.
Right.
They're not.
Yeah.
It's gross.
Right.
It's like having a sip of your dad's coffee or scotch when you're 12.
Ew.
And you're like, why would you ever do this?
Yes.
It's disgusting. And he says, it's an acquired taste, son. But the concept here is if you can take away the flavors, they're not going to get addicted to nicotine.
Yeah.
And if they're not addicted to nicotine, they're going to get to an age in which the vast majority of them are never going to pick up nicotine.
There's always going to be kids like me, too, that always wanted to be perceived as older and cooler, too. So there's probably going to be a handful that are like, I'll do the gross thing because I like that's what older people do. And I'm so advanced and mature.
Maybe. But I feel like the older people aren't doing it now.
No, I know. But I'm saying when I was 17 or 18 years old, there's probably going to be a handful of those kids that want to seem older and cooler, too. And so whatever. But I think just the act of vaping probably has the connotation that it did and with the appeal to smoking in like the 90s and early 2000s, you know. Well, what about kids that try to quit? All right. So there's an article from Pediatrics in October 2023 that highlighted a study out of the University of Nebraska. And it used data from the 2021 National Youth Tobacco Survey that I talked about right at the beginning, looking at methods of vaping cessation by adolescents. So basically, and this is brief, most adolescents who use e-cigarettes attempted to quit in the last year. So almost 68% of them tried to quit. within the last year, and usually without any type of help whatsoever. The common quitting methods that they utilized for teens were peer support, help on the internet, and mobile apps. Very, very, very few of them attempted e-cigarette, very, very few who attempted quitting sought help from a healthcare provider. Almost none. So who knows? There's not much data published yet on how much encouragement by healthcare providers to aid in young people to quit e-cigarette use, but I imagine doing nothing isn't the answer. So in the end,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I just, that would be interesting.
Kids are trying to quit, and I don't know where for helping them very much. So let's prevent them from starting in the first place and then maybe address that they do maybe want to quit or they've tried to quit. Or, you know, 68% of them have tried to quit in the last year.
Yeah, this is all public policy, Julie.
Yeah, I
mean, I'd love to say that doctors can make a huge role. And it's not saying you shouldn't try as a physician to at least say, you know, through your, you know, when you're seeing them for a physical and you have a 16-year-old in the office and you're talking to them about safe sex and all the other things that are really important to make sure that they don't end up with diseases or long-term complications, I think reasonable to say, instead of, do you smoke, are you vaping?
Yeah.
And also to say, you know, I'd like to emphasize that that's not healthy for you and I'd be happy to give you more information and also be here to support if you want to stop and you have had trouble doing that. But at the end of the day, these things, it all comes down to public policy. You need to have bans on things like flavors. You need to not let people smoke indoors. I shouldn't have somebody in a movie theater next to me vaping and blowing the smoke anywhere near me.
Right.
Because I don't want that vape smoke near me.
No.
I didn't ask for it. You know, I'm not putting, you know, like, I'm not doing something in my mouth and blowing my bad breath onto them. You know, it's just, that's what makes a difference.
It's so curious to me, too, that so many of these studies, especially in young people, came out during and after the pandemic and that there really still continues to be high use of these products, even after a global respiratory health crisis. Which blows my mind.
Yeah.
But it also is like back to that smoke 'em if you got 'em kind of joke of like, well, we feel very disempowered and not in control of our lives. So this is something that I can do and I don't care if it hurts me. And it's like that counteracting that. But really, I think we should capitalize on the justified and welcomed social perception of cigarettes as being lame, gross and bad for your health. And just letting that bleed over into e-cigarettes, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something there that our ability to have social interaction face-to-face with people is probably the worst it's been ever. And coming out of the pandemic, and young people especially are mostly on digital stages, right? We're talking about, even in the same room, texting or using Instagram to talk to each other or TikTok.
I've done that.
Yeah. Again, I think that the concept there becomes is when you're under the age of 21, meaning that you can't go to a bar and have a drink in your hand to make yourself feel more comfortable or confident in the situation, you do have access to these products. And if you're 16 and you want to hang out with people and you're uncomfortable, holding something like this or doing something like this can be a big icebreaker or confidence booster.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's how I met.
Because of the social dynamics.
Yeah. That's how I met my friends in college. I could have met them other ways too, certainly, but.
But I think a vast majority of kids are not going to enjoy having a cigarette tasting vape cigarette.
No, I agree.
And so will that stop everybody? Absolutely not. Will it stop a lot of people?
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd like to end with a callback to our friend, Dr. Brady Scott, to sandwich the episode. And I was going to just quote him myself, but then he actually sent me an audio clip of himself saying it because I don't want to mimic his Appalachian accent. Like I said before, I'd like him to do it himself. Would you like to hear Brady give his last little quote?
Please. Hello, Brady.
You know, a lot of people have asked me if vaping is safe. And to be honest with you, I really do understand why they're curious. However, my go-to advice is pretty simple. The only thing I can really endorse for your lungs is clean, fresh air. And nothing more. That's what should be going in your lungs every day.
Thanks, Brady.
Can't even get that in the United States anymore. But that was very well said. It's also so soothing.
Yeah, I love listening to him talk. He's wonderful. All right. Any closing statements, sir? That's all I got for you.
No, I think you did a very good job of at least outlining the research that there is. It sounds like research is very preliminary. I feel very confident that saying that vaping 20 to 30 years from now, we'll have a lot of data that says it is really, really bad for you and does nothing good for you. And I think we'll be on the right side of that argument. So we really need to be working on these public policies. They got to stay out of kids' hands. They need to be out of public places. And other than that, individuals can make their own decisions the same way we've always done it.
Agreed. That's all I got to say. I don't have a clever line.
Don't blow your vape in my face. Listen to your doctor friends.
The amazing music is credited to SkillCell with Pixabay licensure. The podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast should not be taken as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others. Please consult a medical professional for any medical issues that you may be having. The contents of this podcast are the opinions of the hosts only and do not reflect the opinions of their employers or affiliations. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast. Under no circumstances shall Dr. Julie Bruni or Dr. Jeremy Allen or any guest to the podcast be responsible for damages arising from use of the podcast.